Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. This is Nick, and I'm here with my co-host, Terry, and this is Hell No, the Radio Show. Hell No, the Radio Show is a socially conscious, water cooler talk show about what's going on in the world as we feature guests and callers who express their thoughts. Hell No is friendly, it's funny, it's real, and it's focused on empowering the truth. We give a voice to people who feel left in the dust. This program is not democratic, it's not fascist, it's not politically correct, or a place for sacred cows. What we do is we advocate peace, critical thought, education, reading, and social awareness. Write down this telephone number and give me and Terry a call to share your thoughts on our discussion stirring topics on tonight's Hell No episode. The telephone number is area code 718-508-9419. Then when you're prompted, dial option number 1. That number again is 718-508-9419. Hell No is a one-hour show, and we take your calls in the order we receive them, so please do sit tight. I'd like to remind you all that we can receive an email anytime at hellnoradioshow@gmail.com, and also you can find all of our past episodes and information, including contact information, on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Of course, partial support for Hell No, the Radio Show, comes from our loyal sponsors, and I'm going to bring Terry in, and he's going to tell us about them now.
Tonight's show is brought to you by a brand new product. It is the Valkyrie Extra Saddle Pad for horses and horseback riding. It is a unique, innovative pad. It is an orthopedically designed pad to protect your horse from damage, especially along the spine, the delicate areas where the tendons have a tendency to get beat up and shorten up and tear. It is an entirely new idea in saddle pads, made of the highest quality materials. Every bit of it is made in the USA. It is handmade in the United States. The saddle pad costs a little bit extra, but your horse will love you for it. What it does is it transfers weight away from the spine and spreads it out over the rib cage of the horse in a couple of pounds per square inch, as opposed to many, many pounds per square inch along the spine itself. It does this by a unique structure at the apex of the pad. It is made of three different densities of very high quality orthopedic foam, and the way they are layered allows this transference of weight to take place. If you weigh, for instance, 150 pounds, your horse will only feel 81 pounds along its spinal column. It's like you're a little kid riding on top of it. It's a matter of physics. There are no miracles involved, although your horse may think it's a miracle. And we just had an equine veterinarian testing it over the weekend, and her comment was, it felt kind of like I was riding on air. Now, if you're riding in competition for something like polo, it might not be the best pad for you, but if you're exercising your polo pony, if you're doing any kind of maneuvering or what have you, it is extremely sparing on the horse's spinal column. And the horses that are athletes will get many more years in the ring or in the show or in the field using the Valkyrie Extra Saddle Pad. You can get a hold of one of those pads by calling 352-423-0081. That's 352-423-0081. The pads are made currently in two sizes, one for Western-style saddles and one for English-style saddles. The English pad will also fit certain Western saddles. We can make adjustments to the pad for you. Even the cover, the pad cover, is made in the United States, hand-sewn, by the way. Fleece on one side and a very durable material on the other side. We can custom make covers for you as well. So once again, the Valkyrie Extra Orthopedic Saddle Pad. Your horse will thank you. 352-423-0081. Here we are.
That is a really cool invention. I know a lot of horses out there who will really especially a lot of horses here in Texas, have riders who, if you might be able to believe it, are somewhat overweight. And it's a good thing. I bet there's a lot also in horseshoes and different things there too. And springtime with the being rainy and muddy, they tend to be prone to having foot rot and all sorts of other things. So good news in the world of equine technology and advancements.
Yeah, I'll tell you, these pads are remarkable, and they really do send the force out in waves, wave pattern, and the horse can easily handle a few pounds per square inch. It spreads it from a very narrow area over the spinal column, about a 2.5-inch wide area. It spreads it out over several square feet of pad, and it's really amazing how this works. The other thing is, once you're on the pad, you've got to cinch it after about the first 10 or 15 minutes. You've got to retighten the saddle because it conforms to the horse, and there's pressure all the way along. In other words, you don't just have high spots and low spots. This conforms to the high spots and low spots. It's thick enough in the center to do that, and it thins out on the edges so you have complete control on the horse, and the horse can still feel your legs, knees, and what have you, steering him and giving him cues, or her, as the case may be, for the mares. We don't want to be sexist with the horses here. But it's amazing how much it spares the spine, and also, as horses get older and those ligaments shorten up from damage, the gait on the horse becomes shorter. They aren't able to stretch out, and this will prevent that gait shortening damage to the spine. And you see some of the really severe cases where the horse is, swaybacked, where those ligaments are just torn to bits. Ain't going to happen with one of these pads. It's a remarkable thing. A lot of time was spent on it, and it was tested at the Gluck Equine Institute in Kentucky by Dr. Peterson down there. And the horses had pressure-sensitive pads put all over them, and they were run on treadmills and run in the ring, all sorts of things. And they determined that a minimum of 46% of the weight was redistributed. That's a lot.
Hmm. Wow, I'm impressed.
Interesting.
It makes me think about all the ads we see on TV for these different, wear this while you're working out, and it's the muscle, this or that or whatever it is. I've never used one of those, but I did buy a set of magnetic hematite bracelets, and I wear these when I'm working and I'm typing at a keyboard. And it's a tremendous difference in arthritis, and it gets the blood flowing. And you can even feel them after you take them off. You can kind of feel the effect of them still. So I wasn't usually skeptical of these things, but I'm an absolute believer in in things like this that will actually work. Because so often, it's kind of funny when we're talking about tonight. Our title of our show is Living in a World Where Things Do Not Work. It's nice to know that there are some things that are really plain and simple that really do work, and I will swear by magnetic hematite.
Well, super idea there. And this thing really does work. It's been tried on many, many different horses, and I just spent some time with Lord Lyle at the Villages Polo Field in Florida. He owns the polo field there and another one. He's very knowledgeable, very nice man. By the way, I give him great kudos for his view on safety with the horses. I mean, he goes so far overboard, as do most of the polo riders. They are severely penalized if they put their horse in a position of jeopardy, whether or not the horse is hurt. Doesn't matter. They put their horse in a position of jeopardy, they are really slapped. I mean, really hard. Polo is a very safe sport, both for the riders and the horses, but it's safer for the horses than it is the riders by far. The horses have all kinds of padding on them on their legs so that the balls are it will simply not hurt them if there's an impact. Their hoofs are trimmed in a way that the ball will slip and slide off of them. The mallets, the way they're wielded, they're not allowed to do certain things and certain types of hooking of the mallets that they're not allowed because it puts the horse in jeopardy. They really watch out for the horses. And the horses, let me tell you, watching the practices going on is really an educational thing because the whole thrust of what they do is just amazing. The horses want to be out there. I mean, the ones that are tied off on the side are constantly, you know, ready to go, ready to go, ready to go. And they see somebody coming in to switch horses. It's like, me, take me. These are animals that love to go out there. They love to run. They love to play the game. They're animals that are really into things. And the thing that was interesting about Lord Lyle is that he was the first one to admit that horses are not the most intelligent animals on the planet. And he loves horses. He's around them all the time. And he said, for that reason, we have to watch out for them. And it was a really good experience and a really very educational experience to learn all about that. I sat in on a class called Polo 101 and learned a great deal about Polo. He's a really good speaker, by the way. Very interesting man. He used to be in a rock band. Quite a guy. Both his parents were veterinarians, and both his parents played polo, and he played polo professionally for a number of years. He's now a referee. He had an injury, messed up his arm very badly. As I said, the riders are the ones who get the rough end of the stick, so to speak. So anyhow, onward and upward. We have an announcement of a passing personage today, a very famous person, and a person who was seminal to the development of what we now know as rock and roll, and that's Mr. Chuck Berry. He died at age 90. What day did he die? Do you have that?
I can tell you shortly.
It was just a short time ago. Chuck Berry was, he often claimed to be the originator of rock and roll, but so did Little Richard, so did a whole lot of other people. Carl Perkins, claimed the same thing. Bo Diddley claimed the same thing. And, you know, to be fair to all these guys, they were all part of the creation of rock and roll. Certainly no less Buddy Holly, amazing, amazing guy. What we now refer to as rock music had its basis, of course, in old blues and a little bit of country rockabilly. It's become the overriding music of the last 70 years.
Mm-hmm. It was March 18th that he passed. It was interesting. He was born on the 18th of October in St. Mm-hmm. Louis, Missouri. Died March 18th. And he was in Wentzville, Missouri. I don't know where that is, but he was
Wentzville,
90 years
Missouri.
Old.
Missouri, no kidding. I drive by there frequently, and we make jokes about Gonsville, Wentzville, and so forth. I didn't know that. That's an interesting one. Wentzville, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
That's south of St. Louis a ways.
You know,
I-44.
90 years old. You know, it's getting to be a thing to be impressed by people who live that long. And it didn't used to impress me when people lived to 90 years old. I mean, I was used to a lot of people in my family on my mother's side. They lived till, you know, 96, 97. I had, you know, family. I'm not blood related to them, but my father was adopted. I mean, they were Germans, and they lived forever. I mean, Sister Alma was, what, 103? You know, nowadays, we have so many people who are not making it past their 70s. And, you know, it's almost like the curve has gone the different direction. It used to be the life expectancies were shorter, and then people started living longer and longer and longer. And I'm going to say that the generation ahead of me ain't living as long. So it seems.
Well, statistics show that they are living longer. But there are a couple of things that we've got to talk about. First of all, we've got to talk about effective lifespan versus chronological lifespan. And someone can have an effective lifespan of 70 years and still have another 20 years on the planet, but are not in the best of shape. And your effective lifespan is the only part that really counts. So if you die at 80 and you've had an effective lifespan of 79 years, you've done a lot better than the guy or gal who dies at 90, but their effective lifespan ended at the age of 70. The next thing you have to identify, and this is one that a lot of people don't get through their very thick skulls. I say it that way because I just had some very bad problems because of it recently. Your biological age versus your chronological age. I don't know, man. People just can't get it through their skulls that different people age at different rates. And I come from people who age very slowly in comparison to the populace. I'm not out there bragging about it because it really has some downsides, some very serious downsides. But there's almost nobody in my family that doesn't make it to 108, 110. And their effective lifespans are really long. Again, we're not talking about people who are laying there with a drool cup and not able to understand a word that's being said to them. I'm talking about people who are up and around doing things, living a life until they're well into their century mark. And, you know, my mom's 105 and doing absolutely great and fine, and she had me very late in life. She's a remarkable lady, and she lives by herself, and she does all her own work, and she walks a couple miles a day, and she goes swimming in the ocean and does stuff. You know, she's active. She does things. And if you look at her, you'd say, hey, you know, that's a pretty spry 80-year-old lady. And she's 105. My aunt died at 107 last year, and she did not die of old age. She died of dengue fever. So she would have been around a bit longer. There's no question about it. She was still doing just fine until she got dengue fever, sometimes called breakbone fever, which is becoming more and more common in the Caribbean, carried by mosquitoes, another mosquito-borne illness for us to deal with. So here's a real downside to it, and I'm going to get very personal about this, Nick, if you don't mind, because it really has affected my life. First of all, I've come to not very lovingly call it the vampire syndrome, where people I care about around me are aging much faster than I am, and sometimes catastrophically aging. It's very tough. I have been, in the past month and a half or so, been working out very heavy and very hard, trying to come back from a car crash that was, I was hit by a drunk driver, and he really, really did some damage to me about 2 years ago, and it's taken me a long time to heal all that up. And had I not been in pretty good shape in the first place, I probably would have been history. But anyhow, I'm getting back my strength almost faster than I can believe. And, you know, I'm doing 2 or 3 hour and a half heavy, heavy workouts with weights every week. And, you know, it's just not much different from when I was 25 or 30. I'm making about the same gains. I'm coming back about the same way. I haven't injured myself, and getting to the point where some of the younger guys in the gym are beginning to take notice, and because I'm catching up to them. Not bragging, again, does have its downsides, and what I term the vampire syndrome is really one of the worst downsides, when your friends just sort of are being lost
apart.
Off on the sides. That and the fact that they age mentally or psychologically as well. and they sort of become complacent about it, and they kind of just lay it down and say, I'm giving up, and they eat too much. They don't get out there and do something. No matter what your genes are, you can still, by exercising well, by eating well, by taking some good supplements, you can still extend your effective lifespan far beyond what it normally would be. When you just let yourself go, man, it's the end of the world. You've decided, you've made a conscious decision to shorten
to give
your
up.
Life. Yeah, to shorten
right.
your life.
The people that people I see who are, people I see who are, you know, exceedingly obese, and not just, you know, I drink too much beer and eat too many brisket sandwiches, but
yeah,
you know, the people who you would say, you know, you should try to eat well or exercise, and they're like, exercise? I can barely walk across the
mm-hmm.
room. You know, and increasingly people I see using carts to get around, these little carts, buggies,
yeah,
you know,
and
it is
yeah.
kind of a giving up. And I just, it seems that the mental and emotional goes along. I've always thought that mental, emotional, and all that ties in together. And when you're eating good foods, you know, you're getting good proteins, you're getting the right types of fat, it's good for your brain is going to work better. You know, turning age 40 was one of those, okay, you can't eat what you did before, you can't do everything you used to do, it's time to really get it in gear. And for someone who's, my father passed away from liver cancer, and also complications with hemochromatosis, which is too much iron in the blood, typical for us Irish, and he passed away at age 67. I mean, he was 60 years old when he fell in his boat, and the doctor said, you know, if we get your liver fixed with this Irish glue we have to transport over, you'll live probably 7 more years. And he had a tumor on the back of his backside of his liver that was inoperable because of the location. And, you know, with diet and whatever he did, he followed their instructions. He, you know, couldn't, you know, drink anymore and had to, you know, watch diet and food and this and, you know, avoid things with too much iron. But, you know, lived out for, you know, another 7 years. It was almost like the schedule, like they knew the date, you know, how long you can
uh-huh.
make it with some of these things. But for me, I just don't want to wait till that point between age 40 and 60, you know. So I'm on the health kick right now where I'm just eating good foods. And I passed up some good looking chocolate cake yesterday. Let me tell you, I was at this open house thing at one of the law firms, and the cake looked so good. But I was good. I behaved myself.
You just have to visualize it as a tumor. That'll help you.
Well,
help
right.
You
or just
yeah.
or
just
like a picture of a trainer in my
terribly.
Head. You know, what are you doing? But,
well,
yeah. So,
know,
you can. So you're not just doomed by, you know, our people don't live longer. We live long. We really, there's a lot that we can do to influence this as well.
Well, there is, and a problem that I have is, number one, I have people argue with me about my age, saying, oh, you're not this and you're not that. And when I finally show them something that proves my age, then they start looking at me very peculiarly. Yes, I come from a group of people who genetically have been isolated a long time, and genetically they have extremely long effective lifespans. Don't blame that on me, and don't, you know, don't hold a grudge against me. But most of all, don't be afraid to socialize with me, because most of my friends are much younger than I am. The majority of my friends are much younger than I am. And I was working last night. Actually, I was working, doing a little substitution for the group Journey. I worked with them at a show, and I had a young man who was 27 years old, working with me. Former football player, in good shape, all in all. And halfway through the night, he says, my God, don't you ever slow down? He said, you're running my legs off. And I wasn't even thinking about it. I was just doing what I always do. And people have got to start realizing that age, in many cases, chronological age, is damn near meaningless. I need people in my life who are much younger than I am, because they're the ones who are much more my peers than people who are my age. I have no idea what I would do with a lady who was my age, because it would be a completely inappropriate fit for me. I need somebody who's significantly younger than I am in my life, or else, wow, Zammo. I'm just dropping them in the ditch, so to speak, and not intentionally. It's an interesting conundrum, but these are things that we're going to have to start facing very, very soon, realizing that actually in Scientific American, it was a British science magazine, New Scientist. They did an article on people who appeared at least 10 years younger than they actually were. And these people are not common, but they are out there. And many of them reported the same thing, that they were almost discriminated against. And in many cases, I guess, were actually discriminated against because of it. Once people found out what their real age was, and you get into a situation where you're not sure what to do. You know, should you simply lie about your age? Realistically, there is a way of telling how old you are biologically. They measure the telomeres on your chromosomes. That's technology that's been around for not a long time, but a few years, and it's very accurate. I've done my telomeres and my sister's, and we both come out about 14 years younger than our chronological age. That's pretty significant. And you can have your telomeres done, by the way. Dr. Aubrey de Grey over in Britain does this work. And he has a company along, I believe he still has the same partner, and they have an outlet over here and one in Great Britain. He works at Oxford University, and he studies aging. He is an expert on aging and reducing aging and understanding aging. One of the things they have found is that an herb called astragalus or astragalus seems to help prevent the telomeres from breaking. And that's some relatively new cutting-edge stuff. So something that you might want to keep your eye on and see where it all goes. He was also the guy who pretty much popularized resveratrol, which was the red wine extract, which actually isn't quite accurate. It's a red grape extract. It doesn't matter if it's wine or not. Resveratrol is a very powerful antioxidant. It helps protect the body against oxidative damage and oxidative fat reduction, where the fats go rancid and it's a cause for cancer. So anyhow, I've been monopolizing here. I'm sorry, Nick.
It's interesting. Interesting stuff, because there's a lot of times that I think, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, to lose people in your family and to lose them early. However, when we look at that, it gives us a sense of our immortality, and we can look at some of these things and try to make these decisions, you know. And when you see, for me, when you see the progress and you see results, you don't want to go back that other direction, you know. So it's, you know, getting back into the gym, it's always bad. It's always painful. Everyone always say, I worked out, for the first week. I haven't done this in two, 3 years. I was talking to someone today who said, they could barely move afterwards. But then
you beat yourself up, but the endorphins kick in, and it makes it easier.
Yeah.
Because endorphins, after a while, become addictive, and that's good. It's one of the few things that's a good addiction. The more addicted to endorphins you become, within reason, the better off you are. Bike riders get it. Any athletes that are involved in really strenuous exercise develop endorphins both during and after the exercise. And another interesting sideline about endorphins is, if you're working out hard and heavy, afterward, you're not going to be hungry. You really don't want to eat. Good news. So it's not like you go and do your workout and you come off of it and say, oh, my God, I want to eat the house. Look out. Let me at it. Doesn't happen.
Right.
Endorphins actually block the hunger response in the body, and they block it for quite a while. One of the reasons I like to work out at night is if it blocks it, then I don't it lasts long enough that it carries me on to bedtime and don't have to eat until the next day. And it's a great way to help regulate your weight as well.
Right.
So how about
I'll do something.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I just want to throw out a hell yes out there. I'm going to give the information for my trainer because anybody can work with him. I don't care where you are. He's got a thing set up. His name is Jay Dial, D-I-A-L, or Dial, like dial telephone. And he works out of a gym in Lewisville, Texas. And I will share on our Hell No the Radio page, on our Facebook page, I'm going to share a blog article that's got a podcast link to some of his stuff and has contact information to get in touch with Jay. He works with people all over the place, and he will take the foods that he'll basically write you a diet plan and a workout plan based on your age, height, weight, whatever you're trying to accomplish. And he'll work with these people and kind of follow up and kind of virtual. You know, you can be anywhere in the country and make a connection with someone who can help you do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's a former military guy. He also did boxing, played football, has mm-hmm. been in the business of keeping he's also a power lifter. And so I share his videos on Facebook with stuff that I'm like, I wouldn't lift that. What is that, a Mitsubishi? My goodness, my God. But a little
well,
much,
when
but
I,
I'll
when
share
I was
that
in college,
on our Facebook
I would...
page.
Yeah, when I was in college, I was a powerlifter, and the thing I liked about powerlifting is you weren't trying to bulk up, to have showy muscle. You wanted effective muscle, and you tried
right.
to keep your weight as low as you could and still keep your strength up. So if you didn't gain a huge amount of size, you were happy. The less weight you have, the better off you were in competition because you were competing
mm-hmm.
against lighter guys. I like powerlifting a lot. I was a great deadlifter. I was a terrible squatter and a so-so bench presser. But, that's with anybody in powerlifting. It's usually, they have one strong lift and then the other one sort of even everything out. Let's do a little tribute to Mr. Chuck Berry tonight. What do you say? And
all right,
do,
I got it lined up.
Do a little song here. Line them up and let them go.
All right, it's Johnny Be Good.
See down in Louisiana, across the New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny B. Good, who never ever learned to read or write so well, but he could play a guitar.
Johnny B. Goode, a song that's been covered by about a million other artists. Great music, great early rock and roll, and Mr. Berry is Gonesville from Wentzville. And we hope wherever he lands, yes. He's doing his duck walk. For those of you who've never seen Chuck Berry, that was one of his signature moves. He played his guitar and duck walked across the stage. Little shtick thing that he did. The man had a great deal of talent. As with many of the artists, ran into a lot of problems with the law over the years, but always managed to see himself get out from under it eventually. And certainly, I think there was prejudice because of the color of his skin. There existed that as well, and prejudice because he was a musician that played that damn music, as they would call it back then. I'm really amazed at some of the stuff that went on. Buddy Holly, by the way, underwent severe criticism when he tried to bring his brand of rock and roll out there. And I don't want anybody writing in or yelling at me. This is a quote from someone. This was a radio executive. And he said to Buddy Holly, and I quote, "I don't want any of that nigger music on my radio station." And that's how it was referred to early on, because many of the people who were involved in the evolution of blues and rockabilly to rock and roll were, in fact, black people. They were, you know, explain to me why we're not allowed to call Negroes Negroes anymore. That is the correct thing. We can say Caucasians are Caucasians.
You know, you are very interesting that you bring that up, because it's come up before at you know, I'm not going to say where I was or what it was, but someone who's been a little bit older than I was basically said the same thing. No, I'll be in trouble. But basically said the same thing about how ridiculous, like, the political. It was a knock.
Will you tell me later? Will you tell me later?
Sure. I mean, it's not terribly exciting. I just don't want to implicate the person.
But
I mean, I hear
it
frequently from people. I mean, I was as a precinct chair, I go door to door and I canvass neighborhoods, and people will refer to the real nice Negro couple next door, you know, and they're just, you know, referring to them like that, and they mean nothing bad by it at all. They just, you know, it's, you know, I don't know. Like, I
but
still
that's
hear
the name
I,
of the race, for God's sake, you know,
it
Caucasians
is.
Are Caucasians.
And,
Orientals are still Orientals. You call them anything else, you know,
right.
Western Asian people or something. I'm sorry, but Oriental is a race. Negro is a race. Caucasian is a race. Australoid is a race. Negroid is a description, but Negrito is a race. That's the Bushman, the African Bushman. Now, we are going to segue into an unexpected thing here, because you and I did not talk about this in advance. But it's really important, and it was just announced about a week and a half ago. An anthropologist, a lady who has studied over in Tibet and Nepal for years and years, and studied, done blood work on these people, and consistently thought she was doing something wrong because of the results she was getting. She was trying to determine where they had come from. Everybody wants to do DNA and see where everybody came from, right?
But well, ad on TV, what company is doing that? It's $100
yeah,
bucks. You can...
how to give, yeah. I'll warn you, folks, if you think that they're holding on to that DNA in complete confidence, guess again. You can bet that the government and also the intelligence fusion centers, within about 2 days of you getting results, also have the same results, and your DNA is all over the damn planet. I would never do that, and I think that it is one of the worst scams around. Everybody's curious about where they came from. Well, if there were organizations or groups that you could truly trust were going to simply destroy your stuff as soon as it was broadcast or given to you, that would be fine, and also that they would hold in trust that while they were doing it, no one else got the results. But that is just complete horseshit. I'm sorry, folks, but don't do it. Don't give your DNA to somebody. That is dangerous in this day and age. It's crazy dangerous. Anyhow,
this
lady anthropologist published her findings finally after checking, rechecking, and going at this for like 7 years. And what she found, and this is incredible stuff and incredibly important in terms of evolution, apparently the people of Tibet, the pure-blooded people of Tibet and some parts of Nepal, did not come from the original African stock that everyone else allegedly came from. They came from a different branch of the hominid family. They have a different ancestor in the family tree. That is major, major, major stuff. It means that there was more than one group that came up and out of the hominid family tree. And these folks are not very closely related to us. Interesting stuff, huh? They fall so far away that there had to be another ancestor, another ancestral human that they came out of, another type of ancestral human. That is absolutely bone-shaking, curtain-rattling, you know, door-rattling, garage door-rattling. That means that all the things that people had believed for all these years, once again, were proven wrong. Turns out we now have a completely separate branch of our family tree that must have existed that gave birth to the folks who are from Tibet and northern Nepal. How about that? How about that? That's really, really interesting stuff. And having been among those people several times, I can tell you that there are radical differences in the way some of those people think and the way they operate. They're wired differently. And now we have an explanation for it. One more time, the book was written and the book was not right. Those folks forgot to read it. What do you think about that, Nick?
I think that's... should not... I mean, what alarms me? What surprises and... Not much these days. I do have something in the follow-up to that is this idea of not teaching cursive writing in schools. And someone made the comment, it's because they don't want people to be able to read certain historical documents. And when, for example, the Constitution. Now, could you get the Constitution in a text version on Wikipedia? Well, I suppose you could. But do you know that that's going to be as accurate? Do you know that it says exactly? I mean, look at the actual document and then compare to some of these abridged versions and interpretations. Then it's a whole different thing. And when words matter, yeah. Words matter. It matters. You know, it matters. There is right and wrong. There is yes and no. There is what was intended. I mean, it's we're living in a state, our title for tonight's program, Living in a World Where Things Do Not Work. Terry, why don't you tell your story about the woman in the lobby? I mean, this was the poor lady.
I went to a brand new building today. I had to sign some papers, some documents. And I got there and I pressed the button on the fancy chrome glass and what have you elevator, probably plastic all the way around inside. And this very tall, stately lady, very distinguished looking, comes walking in. I would say she was probably in her early 60s. And she's looking around for the desk where, you know, you would normally go to ask what floor so-and-so is on or what office is
or check in,
occupied by
sign
this company.
Your,
yeah, or check
sign
in. And there's nobody there.
An attendant.
And finally, she looks up at the wall. And it says, for information, touch here. Remember, this is a brand new building, by the way. It's been around for about a year. So she goes over and she touches it. Nothing happens. So she goes over there and touches it again. Nothing happens. So she puts her palm on it. Nothing happens. She taps it a couple of times. Nothing happens. And I looked over at her and I said, yeah, technology, ain't it grand? And she just looked at me, and she got this big smile on her face, and she said, nothing works anymore. And I said, you know, you're preaching to the choir. Come over here and share my elevator with me. And it turns out we were going to the same office on the same floor. So I was actually helpful to her by doing that. I didn't have a lot of time to speak to her, but we spoke a little bit. She was a very pleasant lady. And we very quickly exchanged the idea that nothing's really working right anymore. There are so many things that are broken, and the people are broken along with it. You know, hell no, we don't need any more technology. We've got too much crap that we don't understand anyway, and it doesn't work. It breaks. It malfunctions. I have a computer right now that is double imaging things. I took it to have someone look at it, and it was the usual, I don't know, I've never seen that before, can't figure it out. Well, if you can't figure it out and you build the damn things, who can figure it out and how does this happen? If somebody worked for General Motors, man, they know how to fix a Cadillac.
Here's my recent repair in technology. Okay, so I've had these Samsung front load washer and dryer, and they're about 7 years old, and the dryer started doing a thing where it's digital. It tells you how much time is left. And at some point, it started doing this little infinity symbol it made, and it was starting and stopping, doing all sorts of crazy things, acting all crazy.
Sorry, but that's supposed to infinity symbol.
Right. I'm like, it's like infinity. I'm like, we're gonna dry your clothes into it for infinity, which actually is what ended up happening because the heating element went out. So in a jam, I had to let that sucker, you know, tumble dry. I mean, it's good thing it's 70 degrees out. It took forever. I'm like, it's awful, but I don't want to go to a laundromat. I'm gonna go on YouTube, and I go on YouTube. All right, yes, there's a video on how to remove the you know, take the
Nick,
thing apart
Nick,
and get.
I have to interrupt you for a second, man. I just have this vision of your frilly things shrinking down from a size 36 to a size 5, and picking them up and having your hand not fit in your underwear anymore.
Yeah, what is this? What is this, you know? I mean, it's...
I have mittens now. I have mittens.
You have mittens. Yeah, great. So, so I'm looking at a YouTube video thinking I'm going to fix this. Forget it. When we were at step number 17, take the back off, take this apart, you'd have to have separate little bags to put the screws in, label it, step number 1. I said, the hell with this. It is worth spending money to have someone else come in and do this. So I go and I get scammed by this current scam that's apparently I didn't know about, but everyone else knew about. So this weaselly little character comes out and tells me how he and his daddy been fixing washers and dryers since he was 13 years old. Now he's 44 years old. And I'm like, that's great for you. Now, can you fix this? And he's, oh, no, well,
fix
this is going to be wrong.
Dryer.
That's going to be wrong. That's going to be $230, $300, you know, this making a noise. Now we're up to $365. He says, it's not worth it. I don't want to fix it. It's not worth it. He said, how old is this machine? 7 years. He's like, it's junk. Just, you know, you can go get you a new one on Craigslist or wherever else for, you know. I'm like, okay. I'm like, let me think about it. And then he's like, all right. He's like, that'll be $45 for today. I was like, you've been here for about a minute and 30 seconds. He's like, well, I diagnosed it. And if you want to get it fixed, your $45 will go towards your, you know, repair. I'm just like,
yep.
$45,
nice.
Get the hell off my property before I start. I'm getting irritated. Like, you need to go. And so I'm thinking, you know, what am I going to do? I finally, what I ended up doing was, I went down to an area in Dallas. It was worth the drive. They have some of these, like they have refurbished machines. And I got Maytag top loaders, basic old Maytag. I'm like, the Maytag man sits around and got nothing to do because the things don't break. I'm like, I want simple like that. And I got to add into Craigslist because I don't want to deal with people on Craigslist. That's terrible. Actually, Facebook is a better place now to to do buying and selling of things. There are a whole bunch of Facebook marketplaces. And, you know, so make an offer, someone, you know, get rid of these things. But, you know, go back to the basic stuff that things work. And I thought about my vacuum cleaner. You go to buy a vacuum cleaner today? I remember in years past we had Electrolux. And it was an investment because
oh,
it lasted
good,
a long
good
time.
Good stuff, man.
It was good stuff. It was
those
like
and the Kirby's.
TVs. Right.
Yep.
So,
Kirby's
you know,
and Electrolux.
So now this stuff now, these vacuum cleaners don't last for more than a couple of years. So unless you want to, and I don't even know if it's worth buying a really good one, or if you just, you know, use one of these things for a couple of years, go spend $100 and get another. That's what I want the time machine for. So if I found the keys to the DeLorean, I would be going back in time and shopping at the Electrolux vacuum cleaner store. And, you know, the only thing is
quality,
the Zenith
babe.
TV. Right, the yeah. Zenith TV, that's not going to work. But even now, let's talk about vehicles. I have a 97 Chevy Tahoe and a 2009 Silverado. The 2009, I mean, you put it, it rains too hard and you get, you know, dings and we just had a hailstorm and it got beat up a little bit. I parked it under some trees, but that old Tahoe, that thing, you could dance on the hood of that thing and you're not going to screw it up. You know, it still runs. The door lock actuators went out on my Silverado. It's a 2009. The door locks should last longer than, I mean, it's not even 10 years. I mean, we're talking about 8 years.
I got the same problem with mine. I got a Chevy where the door lock actuators are shot.
Yeah.
Absolutely
shot. Well, and I found them, buy them online, and bought them online because, you know, they're the same deal wherever you get them from. I bought them online, went to a body shop. And he put them both in for me for $100 because, you know, I've taken doors apart on my vehicles before, but those are in the 80s and the 90s when they were made. Now, I mean, the stuff is made so that you can't work on it. You take your door apart by yourself. You don't
surprise,
know exactly what you're doing.
Surprise,
it's
surprise.
Never going to work. Here's another thing. They've got these airbags. There's a recall for my airbags, and I'm not going to do it because – there's no guarantee that the replacement airbag ain't going to be as bad as the original one that they complained of because they said they really – I don't know. But I can tell you this one thing. If they take apart your dashboard and all that to get to this stuff, there's no way that it's going to get put back together as good as it was. You're going to have noises and problems and whatever. So I'm going to take my chances on that. I must say nope, but it's just – you know, so what I do, it's kind of like a mantra – where I say, you know, what would we have done in the 80s, you know, or the 70s? And even looking at houses today, you know, I can get a brand new 3-bedroom house for around $200,000. And I think, I just don't know, that one that's built in the 70s, it might not have as tall of ceilings and all the, you know, whatever they have today, the ceilings are tall. It's, you know, a small, you know, starter home is designed like a little mini McMansion. But I just don't know that they're that well built. And, you know, frankly, I just don't know
what
if
do
I want to live that close.
You mean you don't know?
The lot size. I
do
know
that. Just they're junk.
They're junk.
Man.
I mean, they're.
Most new homes you can cut into with a box cutter. You can cut through the plastic outside, the insulation next, the incredibly cheap gypsum board, finally, with a box knife. You can cut into just about anybody's house, and you don't have to kick in the door. Hell, you're not very loud when you're cutting through a wall with that. You know, you just zip, 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 and walk in. Reminds
Wouldn't
me
that be a fun crime scene thing to see?
Oh, yeah, it would be good. It would be good.
All right. Hey, what happened, Terry? Let's we didn't talk about the pets, the reptiles. That what happened in Knoxville?
Oh, well, these aren't pets. These are specimens at the Knoxville Zoo in the reptile house, and they lost 33 animals, died overnight, one night. Some of the animals that were still alive, they were able to revive a few of them. They're doing extensive testing on them. No one has any real idea of what happened or why it went on. It's highly suspicious. That was almost half of the reptile collection in the Knoxville herpetarium. And You know, the paranoid side of me says I'd be looking at the animal rights people again. They're the ones who do things like that. The radical AR people are a curse on our planet. They do more harm to animals than anyone else alive. They are incredible. They are brutal. They are bizarre. They are individuals who have no personal power when they're young. So when they get old enough, they link themselves up with these causes, these hot-button causes. And you see them with the animal rights groups, and you see them with the women's issues, and you see them with the child porn things. It's really sad. Hell no,
hey, let's,
we don't need any more whack jobs.
I just brought live our buddy who's listening out there with 0619, and his digits had his hand raised. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing very good. There's so much to talk about, and there's no time to left to talk. First off,
oh, go ahead.
You guys missed it the last couple of weeks. Too much technology. If you get in an accident, call the insurance company. If you need wood, call the Menards. Call, you know, Home Depot. What do you get? You get seven choices, and then you pick your choice. Then you get two choices after that. Whatever happened to answering a phone?
What phone?
Yeah, right.
What phone? Are you kidding me? You can't. I have looked at this whole issue. I'm glad you brought this up because I've looked at this whole issue over and over again. Excuse me. Every time somebody tells me it's easy to order off the internet, what are you, nuts? Do you not remember how easy it was to make a phone call and tell the guy at the lumber yard, I need 5 2x4, 8 footers, I need clear or better on it, and that's the end of it. See ya, pick it up. Instead, you sit there and go through layers of bullshit trying to find the items in the first place, and then click on this, and then click on that, and then you have no idea what it really looks like because there's nothing there but a picture, and sometimes not even that. Oh, my God. Ordering off the internet is just such a ridiculous way to go, a complete crapshoot. Unless you have seen the item, unless you've experienced the item, unless you have touched the item, you can't do it. And especially books. Why the hell would I buy a book from Amazon? If I didn't know that book already, there is no way I'd buy a book from Amazon. What are you going to do? Return it once you got it because it wasn't the book you thought it was? Okay, now how much time have you wasted and how much money have you wasted in the process of having to package it all back up and send it back again? Buy it from a bookstore. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they've turned into junk shops. Barnes & Noble's an embarrassment from what they used to be. They are awful. They have turned into junk stores and toy stores. The next one, Books A Million, held out for quite a while. Now they're going in the same direction. And, you know, for those of us who are truly bibliophiles, these places represented like the last place we could get books. The independents, of course, have been put out of business by the big guys like Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. So we don't have private bookstores anymore. Now what do? I guess we go and get Nooks. Well, yeah, isn't that a great idea? Things that are unbelievably inferior to actual books, both in terms of our learning experience and what we do with them. I'm sorry, I'll get off my pulpit.
I agree, though.
Do you have time, Terry, what animals were killed at that zoo? What all species
a
of
bunch,
animals?
A were... bunch of snakes and lizards were killed there, and a couple of turtles, I believe. And they came in one morning, and these animals were dead and dying. More than half the animals in the reptile house were dead or dying. Scary, scary business.
Senseless.
Well, we're about ready to have to say good evening to everyone tonight. We thank you for listening. I'm sorry our program has been erratic lately. It's not my fault.
Last week was.
Any rate. Yeah, last week was. You're right. You're right. I defer to you. I raise my hand in apology. All right.
We'll be back next week, though. We'll be back.
Thanks,
same
everybody.
Time,
we will be back
time.
Next week.
Have a good
we'll
night.
Talk to you then.
Bye-bye. Over and out.